Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, March 31st, 2014. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on the host site Podbean. You can email the podcast at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Mundane Festival. You can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. You can like the podcast on Facebook also. So there's a lot of ways you can get down with this show and have access to it. I'm trying to make it easier for you. I mean, sometimes I post on Google Plus when I remember. There's just so many platforms, and it can be overwhelming. And I'm just one person, and I try so hard, you guys. I try so hard. All right. This is episode 60 of the Mundane Festival. 60 episodes I've done. And it's a milestone. This podcast can now get AARP magazines and get coupons for Depends, Metamucil, movie ticket discounts, a lot of things. So we're getting up there. Our podcast is aging well. And so I'm happy. I'm going to call this episode Bill Willis. Bill Willis was a guard and a tight end, played with Ohio State and the Cleveland Browns. But let's get into it a little bit. Let's get into it. Bill Willis was born on October 5th, 1921 in Columbus, Ohio, standing at 6 feet 2 inches, weighing in at 210 pounds, went to Columbus East in Ohio, went to Ohio State, debuted in 1946 for the Cleveland Browns, and last played with them in 1953, only with one team, the Cleveland Browns. Three-time Pro Bowl selection, eight-time All-Pro selection, four-time AAFC champion, NFL champion in 1950. His number at Ohio State, number 99, was retired in 2007. NFL 1940s All-Decade Team, Cleveland Browns Ring of Honor. Played 99 games, won interceptions, and played eight seasons in the NFL. And I picked him because I didn't really know this. He was, along with Marion Motley, were two of the first African-American football players who played in the modern era. When he got out of Ohio State in 1949, let's just read this. While the exclusion of black players was not a written rule, no African American had played in the National Football League since 1933. The gentlemen's agreement had been in effect ever since the segregationist George Preston Marshall of the Washington Redskins entered the league as owner of the Boston Redskins in his physical prime. So he could have played football, but because of racism, he did not, and he started coaching at Kentucky State College, and then he came back. He got back in because of Paul Brown, who owned the Cleveland Browns, and he started playing, and this was around, I'm searching for a year, trying to find this. Come on, Wiki. Well, he played, hell, when did he start playing with the Browns? 1946, so he had like a year layoff, and then he started playing, man. And yeah, he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer, and yeah, so he, you know, this guy went through a lot of shit, And that's why we're going to call this episode Bill Willis, episode 60. So if you want to look up more about him, check him out. He was elected into the in 1977. He got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and then he was also in the College Football Hall of Fame. So definitely check out Bill Willis's stuff if you get a chance, and if you choose to do so. How about that, guys? This was a comedy heavy week last week. Oh, plugs. I'll give you some plugs. Why don't I give you some plugs before I talk about my fun week in comedy? Tomorrow, I'll be April 1st. I'll be at Legion Bar on the Rabbit Hole comedy show. That's going to be at 8 o'clock at Legion Bar in Brooklyn, New York. I'll be at Bar 2A on April 2nd. At 8 o'clock p.m., I'll be at the Creek in the Cave on April 6th at 8 o'clock. April 16th, I'll be at Fat Baby in the Lower East Side. That's at 10 p.m. April 18th, I'll be at Beauty Bar at 8 o'clock p.m. And May 1st through 3rd, I'll be working with Chris Hardwick again at Caroline's on Broadway in New York City. I'll be hosting those shows at Caroline's. That's going to be a lot of fun. I heard that those tickets were almost sold out. So definitely come to those. If there's any other dates, I'll post them to my website at chrislamberth.com. There may be some things coming. I'm just not going to talk about it unless those dates are actually confirmed. All right, because I don't want to tell you I'm going to be somewhere, and then I don't show up. I'm like, hey, where's Chris? You said you're going to be there, bro. And then I don't show up, and then you'll just hate me forever. And I don't want you to hate me. I don't want that. All right. So last week comedy was really fun. I want to thank Julia Rossi for having me on Dive Comedy, having me on that show. It's a show in Brooklyn at Freddy's Bar and Back Room in Park Slope. I had a good time. Shout out to Jen Kwok for having me on her really cool variety show at the Pit. It's called We're Getting Weird, and it's a monthly show. It was a lot of fun. Variety shows are some of my favorite shows to do around the city because you get to see all different types of acts. There was a singing duo called the Reformed Whores, and they got like a country vibe, but they say nasty shit and fun, and they make it funny, obviously. They're a little crass and not too crass, but they're just fun. How about that? They're fun. They sing and they play the guitar and they play ukulele and it's fun. And Jen Kwok also sings and does stand up and does storytelling. So it was just a really good time. And a lot of times those are the most. And they had a magician also, and that's always fun. You know, it's fun, and it's fun for me as a comedian because you're the only comedian, like I was the only stand-up, and you kind of get showcased a little bit, and it was a good time. So I want to thank Jen Kwok again. Shout out to her for having me on. Shout out to Levity Live for having me on Thursday. I hosted the NYC Pro Show. They do a weekly show, I believe it's weekly on Thursday nights, and they'll have like four or five comics. And it's about a 90-minute show, and each comic does about 15, some do 20, anywhere between 15 and 20 minutes. And that, I gotta say, that was one of the best weekday shows, not just being a host, middle, and a feature and headliner, but just like a regular fun showcase show. That was really cool. Like I got an applause break on a hosting set. I mean, I'm me, but I mean, it was a lot of fun. Like the crowd was really into it, wire to wire. It was a great time. So yeah, that was fun. Who was on that show? Let me get, hold on a second. I'll tell you who was on the show. Mick Diflo, Ian Fidance, John Moses, and Jason Kanner. They're all New York City area comics. And it was just a fun time. Like, it just pretty much wire to wire, that whole show was fun. The crowd was digging it. And sometimes you never really know what you're going to get when you're at a show like that. When, you know, during the week, you never know what people are going to, what their vibe's going to be, you know? So, yeah, that was really good. And then, Friday I had the show at, the Holly Silk Mill, with Phoebe Robinson, and that was out in, northeastern Pennsylvania, Holly, Pennsylvania. That was about a two hour ride from, where I live to the venue. And it was really cool. The Holly Silk Mill is what it is. It's a silk mill, but it was renovated to have like different kinds of shops and people. I guess people just basically rent out the space. They have, they have their markets, they have crafts and stuff. You could go to the website and see all the stuff that they have. They had like a fitness center. And then they had this boiler room space, where they have musical performances and different types of shows. And they just started doing comedy, I think, a month or two ago. Or this year they just started doing it. And Phoebe and I were their second foray into doing that. And I had a great time. Phoebe opened up the show. She did her thing, got the crowd going, got them laughing. And then people started, we were a little nervous before because the booker was like, oh, I don't know if people are coming, and I was sick, and I don't know if, and people, she tweeted I tweeted a lot about the show, and, I want to say there might have been 40 people at the show. For that venue, which is, it's pretty small, but I think you could probably get, I don't know how many people you could get in there, but for that show, and then like she told us before the show, that there was another comedy night in the area and it was their last one. So there might've been people going to that and not coming to ours. And I'm thinking, I'm telling Phoebe, like, what comedy night in Holly, Pennsylvania would be better than you and me, Phoebe? I don't fucking know. Like, my ego, I have an ego. I'm not going to lie and act like I don't have an ego, but I'm thinking to myself, like, seriously, really, is it going to be better than what Phoebe and I are going to bring to the table? I'm not so sure about that. But anyway, the people came and people started coming in as the show was going on. So people were still coming in, and it ended up being a lot of fun. And I did about 40 plus minutes. And as a young comic, that was a lot of time, and they laughed through the whole show, and it was good. It was a good opportunity for me to stretch out, and it was fun talking to the crowd. The crowd was really nice. There were more black people than I expected, and I thought that was neat. How about that? There were a lot of black people. It was just a good time. I love doing the road. So shout out to Holly, Pennsylvania, and it was a really fun time. And then to cap my weekend off, I went to go see friend of the podcast, Damian Lemon, at Caroline's on Broadway. He had his second headlining weekend. I don't know if it was his first or he had a, basically, the guy had a headlining weekend at Caroline's, and that's a really big deal. He just got off of recording his half hour for Comedy Central, and I'd never seen Damian do a long set. I saw him open for Hannibal Buress maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and that was only about 20 minutes. He was terrific, but just seeing him do a long set was pretty fantastic. Damian's one of the best comics in New York City. One of my favorite, he's just one of my favorite comics to watch. And it was just really, inspiring to see that, to see when I met him about 5 years ago, and then to see he was already funny then, and then to see him now as he keeps just climbing the ladder, just being consistently funny, just very engaging, great storytelling, great jokes, who's smart, and just the references that he threw out randomly were just spot on and terrific, like with the crowd work. And it was just really inspiring to see. It's just step your jokes up, everybody. It just makes you want to work harder. And like, he's one of those guys, when I see him work, he's just terrific. So he's a joy to watch. So if he's ever in your town, go see that guy. Look him up. Look up his website. Follow him on Twitter, D Lemon Comedy. Listen to his episode. I believe that was episode 16 on the Mundane Festival. It's a great episode. One of the episodes I'm going to say that I'm the proudest of. One of them. Out of the 60. Yeah, so it was just inspiring to see, and it was great. I wanted to make sure that I went to that. Support your friends, everybody. Also, so this past week has been comedy heavy, just as far as the cancel Colbert movement, where people don't understand satire, people don't understand context. We're just getting into just dangerous times where people's freedom of speech. Is it freedom of speech? It's just there's a lot of ignorance, and people want to be offended by everything now. The only way people can write or blog now is to be offended by something. And they're just constantly looking for this. And I don't want to go into full detail about the Colbert thing. You can look that up. I mean, if you've been on the internet, and if you're listening to this podcast, or you listen to podcasts, or you're just familiar with the daily goings on of the internet, you know what the cancel Colbert thing is about. But just in a nutshell, Stephen Colbert was making a joke about Daniel Snyder for throwing money for not. OK, so Daniel Snyder is not changing the name of the Redskins, but he's going to give money to a Native American foundation. So he's basically just throwing money at this organization. Like, shut the fuck up. I'm still keeping this name because I don't want to change it. And then there was a joke about, like, then Stephen Colbert basically said something about Asians, and Asian people got mad, but it was in the it was supposed to be satirical off the basis of Daniel Snyder, and people didn't understand that, and then they got upset. So it's going to be interesting to see what that happened on Thursday, because I didn't know anything about it until I woke up the next morning. I'm seeing all this cancel Colbert, seeing some of my friends defend Stephen Colbert or talk about it, tweeting about it, and I'm just like, another thing to get pissed off. People trying to get pissed off about. But I'm thinking the next episode of the Colbert Report is going to be pretty interesting. And by interesting, I mean hilarious. I don't really watch the show like that, but I know that Stephen Colbert is playing a character who's just this super, super right-wing kind of guy. And that's who he's playing. He's playing a character. And I don't know how long he's been doing it. He's been doing it for a long ass time. And people, I don't know. But then it just, and then the Redskins, man, they got to change. They got to change it. But I don't think, and I don't know if it's just, and it may, I used to think it was just a money thing, but I don't think it really is now. I think, and then some people have said this, I've listened to, who have I listened to? I've listened to Bomani Jones talk about it. I've listened to other media personalities talk about it on ESPN. A part of it is just maybe Daniel Snyder is a, he'd been a fan of the Redskins since he was a kid, and that's, he's just not going to change it. And it's like, how can you, so you're getting upset at a fictional character making a joke, but you want to cancel that show, but nobody's going to boycott the Redskins. Nobody's going to do that. And especially not if DeSean Jackson plays with them. We'll get into that a little later. And then yesterday, I'm chilling. I'm, you know, just watching TV, hanging out. And then I'm on Twitter, and I'm seeing where Michael Che, who's a very funny comedian in New York City, also a writer on Saturday Night Live, I'm seeing his tweets. And he's going back and forth with this woman who created a cancel SNL hashtag. And I'm going through the tweets and looking at the other person's tweets, and I'm thinking, why are they doing this? And this is because of because SNL had a sketch called Black Jeopardy, and Black Jeopardy was Kenan Thompson hosting, Jay Farrow playing a contestant, Sasheer Zamata was playing a contestant, and then Louis C.K., who was the host, was playing, obviously, a white guy that was basically a fish out of water. And this sketch was really hilarious, and it was really funny. That was one of those sketches on that episode that I laughed the most. You know, granted, on SNL, there's going to be a couple sketches that are hit or miss, but then there's at least maybe two or three, or sometimes maybe just one that's really just laugh out loud hilarious. This Black Jeopardy sketch was one of them. So I'm watching it. I didn't think anything of it. Oh, that's really funny. And I moved on with my life. And then I look at Che's tweets, and he's going back and forth, and look at this. And they think, oh, it's degrading the race, and it's da-da-da-da-da. We should cancel SNL. And they hire black writers, and they give us this. And it just seems like so many people complain about SNL, and they don't even – I didn't know that people cared that much. I didn't know that they watch it that much. They say, oh, it's been bad for so long. If it's been bad for so long, why do you watch? Why do you watch? And then they're trying to get, oh, I hope the people involved with Cancel Colbert want to cancel SNL too, and let's bring in Living Color back. And then I see people say where, oh, Living Color had Handyman. And then somebody said Damon Wayans created the Handyman character because he had a disability. I didn't know Damon Wayans had a disability, but if you look, and Living Color was a great sketch show. They made fun of gay people. They made fun of black people. They made fun of white people. They made fun of people with disabilities. They had the fly girls, like sexy women dancing. They didn't make fun. I didn't say they made fun of the fly girls. They had the fly girls, who were these super hot women that danced to hip hop music. I don't know if that's exploitation, but I mean, with the lenses, if you look back, with the lenses that people have now, there's a lot of shit you could pick apart with that. And they're saying, bring back this show. And it's just ignorant, and it's dumb. And it's really sad that where art, you can't, they're trying to censor artistic expression. And that's really shitty. This isn't Fahrenheit 451. This isn't Nazi Germany. This is America. And now the problem is everybody has a voice and everybody shouldn't. And people think if they raise their voice with one. See, now this is getting kind of touchy, but yes, everybody has a voice, but social media just kind of, distorts? I'm trying to figure this out. Social media, I think with social media, people think that they can say whatever they want. And they can, well, they can and they do, and they hide behind these screen names. And I noticed that the people that are making these, a lot of the people that are making these proclamations that you should cancel these shows, they're not even using their real name. They're hiding behind like some bullshit Twitter handle. And then a lot of the people that are making these statements that are defending, not necessarily defending it, but that are putting themselves out there are using their real names. Think about that. Just think about, are you going to really stand? Do you really stand behind what you say if you're not using your real name? Your real name is your Twitter handle, or not some goofy screen name? Huh? Think about that, folks. No, it's getting really annoying, and it's just sad that people just want to find things to get upset about. And I watched that sketch again, and I think Michael Che tweeted something a little later on, and he was just saying like people are afraid that with that sketch in particular, they think that all black people are like that. All black people act like the Jay Farrow and Sasheer Zamata characters, and it's not true. They don't. It's just two people in a sketch. It's not that. It's funny. God forbid you have a funny sketch on SNL. I don't know. I remember doing a play one time. And this play called, and I may have mentioned that I did this show before, but there's this play called The Exonerated. And there's a play about, maybe five or six people that were exonerated from death row because they didn't commit the crimes that they were wrongfully convicted. And some of the characters were from the South and they had accents. And I was obviously played a black dude that was from Florida. And he had an accent because he was from the South, and he had a regional dialect, and we had a dialect coach, and I was working on the dialect. I would listen to a lot of my favorite rappers who were from the South and how certain inflections would go and to make it authentic. And there was one black kid on the show. I was like, I don't know if I talk from the South, if I'll sound dumb from my race. I'm like, dude, it's a fucking character. Your guy is from this specific place. You talk, if you're supposed to be from this area, you talk like the people from the way that the people from the area talk. It's not, you're not disgracing that region or that race or your race just because you have an accent. It's just like, play the character. When you take a role and you're involved in a story, you think about different things, but you think about the given circumstances that your character has. What kind of situation is this person in? Where is he from? What was his family life like? There's questions that you ask yourself as you're approaching, as you're taking on a role. And that's what you do. It's what you do, and that's how you build your character. It's not like, what are they? If you keep, as an artist, putting all these, you're giving yourself roadblocks, and you're not allowing yourself to evolve. You're not allowing yourself to fully inhabit the character or to fully you're supposed to be limitless when it comes to that. I mean, you're supposed to be limitless in creativity, and you're cutting yourself off. It makes me think that now as artists, as performers, it's gonna start to make people cut themselves off before they can fully realize a joke or a sketch or a script or thoughts, because we're supposed to have this freedom of speech. We're supposed to be able to try to figure things out. And some of the best ways and to contribute to the culture, and some of the best ways and the most poignant ways is through the arts. And when you attack the arts, you attacking me, motherfucker. You're attacking my friends. And it's not right. And why do you see AIDS movies get Oscars? Or, I mean, I know I joke about it, but you see people getting AIDS in movies. You play somebody gay, you get nominated for an Oscar. You play a slave and you win an Oscar. I mean, I'm not going to say those are extremes, but those are, but that's reality. And a lot of times if people see a movie like 12 Years a Slave, they'll say, oh man, slavery was fucked up. I should try to be nicer to people that are different from me, or whatever. If you see Philadelphia, you say, oh man, this AIDS is fucked up. There's a struggle, or this guy's human. He's human, but even though he is gay, like, I mean, this, you know, I don't know that I'm rambling a little bit, but I think I hope you get something out of that. But I don't know if it's just when you see something like that artistically, when you see a play and a character is gay, but then you also see, and when you may have thought, basically I'm saying art has the ability to change people's hearts, to change opinions, to make them look, to make the viewer, to make the audience look within inside themselves. And I guess a lot of times, and then change, but then a lot of times when art holds a mirror up to society, people don't like what they see. And then that's one of the reasons that makes them get upset and why there's anger. I don't know. It's scary. It's sad, man. And I mean, the most common, you could blow it off and, you know, it's like, oh, this is funny or whatever. And these people are stupid, but there's a lot of numbers in that stupidity. It's a lot of people that think that way. And I don't know, it's getting to be annoying. Everybody's got to have a think piece about, what about Black Jeopardy? What about Colbert? And then people do make fun of Asians because they feel like they can, because Asians won't fight back, I guess. I don't know, but I think there's a blogger called the Angry Asian Man or Angry Eight. Let me just see what this guy calls himself. But Angry, what am I doing here? Angry Asian. Yeah, Angry Asian Man that has a blog. And I think this makes me, yeah, I guess he has a blog or whatever. But he's going to get angry. If there's nothing to be angry about, I don't know if he blogged about this, but just for instance, like, even if you're an angry Asian guy, you're an angry Black guy, you're going to want, if your whole character, your whole persona is driven by something to be angry about. Yeah, he did. You're going to be hard pressed to find something. You got to find shit to be angry about. And so, hey, And it made me think about the, I watched the Jeremy Lin documentary, Linsanity, and it's on Netflix, and I really enjoyed it. It kind of bordered on the edge of being a bit of a fluff piece, but it's still a good story, and it's still really, inspirational about this kid that's like, this kid from the Bay Area. His parents, where is he? See, I want to get this right because I want to. Oh man, Jeremy Lin. I just want to make sure I have his parents' nationality right. Looking for Jeremy Lin's parents' nationality. All right. Okay. They say he's American. They say, okay, so Lin is one of the few Asian Americans in NBA history and the first American of Chinese or Taiwanese descent to play in the league. And then he talks about Christianity, but I want to see where his... He was born in Los Angeles, immigrated from Taiwan. Okay, so Taiwan, then they moved to Indiana, they moved to Virginia, then Indiana. All right, cool. His parents are from Taiwan. All right. So, yeah, it was just really inspiring to watch. It was cool. And here's this kid who's an American, but he's Asian and he could ball. Nobody really wanted to recruit him, and then did not get an athletic scholarship. Got into Harvard. Well, I'll get back to that. And I was telling a friend, another comic about. I watched the Jeremy Lin documentary. It was good, and she said. Well, I mean, he's average. He's marginal at best. I'm like, he's a fucking starting NBA player. He doesn't start now, but he plays. He comes off the, like, he's in the rotation on an NBA franchise, and he looks the way that he looks. He's Asian. That's huge. That's amazing. And which is dominated by black dudes. And he can hold his own against them. And you can say whatever the fuck you want to or not. The way he balled against all those guys in that stretch, like, he killed it. And you can't, it's undeniable. Talent is undeniable, but that undeniable talent also has to get opportunity. And the way that he worked, he had to go back to the D-League. It's, I mean, you can just look at his Wikipedia page and see, but I mean, It's really good, but and I would say check it out. But the funny thing about this documentary was that, you know, he said that, you know, I went to Harvard, and he said I took the math test, and the math test, they basically said, you know, it was a math placement test, and he was like, yeah, you know. The teachers were saying that, you know, if you can't finish it, just, you know, do as much as you can and turn it in. And he failed the math test, but he was Asian. Oh, you know, Asians are supposed to be. All right. And then he didn't do well on the Chinese test either. So it was just like, he was just like good at basketball, but I'm sure he was a smart guy. He was in fucking Harvard, but, I thought that was funny. I mean, it was funny to me because he did not fit in well with the stereotype of being good at math, like good enough to just like test out of math. I mean, shit, full disclosure, I did not test out of math in undergrad. I may have mentioned this before on the show, but I had to take remedial math without a calculator, and it was the best, Rosemary Heilman, to this day, one of the best math teachers that I ever had in my life. The time that she spent with me, I should have been a defensive tackle. I was just a regular black kid in the drama club with no athletic ability. All right. So I would check out Linsanity, but my point is, why did I bring up Jeremy Lin? Basically, people saying there was racism. There's racism with the black people. The people say, oh, you can't play because you look how you look, and we're not going to give you a chance. And that was shitty. And you'll find the connection in that, but it just, he came up, I guess, because of the angry Asian man. And I think the angry Asian man was, I believe he was in the Linsanity documentary. All right. But that sucks, man. You can't stifle creativity with this bullshit. Like, if I say this, are they going to get mad? Or if I say this, are they going to blog about me? I hope you blog about me. Yeah, man. It's that. It's not a good look. It's not a good look at all. All right. So I wanted to talk about DeSean Jackson. I brought him up a little bit earlier. DeSean Jackson got cut from the Eagles after having one of a career year, basically. And I think the Eagles' reason, basically, they wanted to say that he has gang affiliation. Now, a lot of players in the NFL, you know, they're from the inner cities, or they're from bad areas, bad neighborhoods, and they might know people that was involved in doing dirt, and that just happens. That's just how it is. But that doesn't mean just because you know a guy. You know, you might know a guy from the neighborhood that was involved in some shit, but that doesn't mean that you're in it. But then they said that someone broke into his house in January. Someone broke into just DeSean Jackson's house in January, and that gave the police reason to, they were questioning him and all this other bullshit. You can read about it, but basically, in a nutshell, that was just a reason. Basically, that's a reason to, so he's a free agent, so, and they cut him. Contracts aren't really guaranteed in the NFL. They cut the guy, so then his price goes down, so whoever picks him up can get him at a cheaper price. And they say, oh, and well, we heard that you might have been affiliated with yada, 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 so instead of you getting $10 million, we might give you $6 million. Or we might give you $5 million. I don't know the exact measure of that, but that's basically what it is. So they're trying to fuck up this guy's money, and that's what they're doing. On the bright side, maybe he can go to the Redskins. Apparently he's visiting with the Redskins today. And that would be a good look, because the Redskins need help. They need help getting rid of their racist name, and RG3 needs somebody to throw to, because right now he doesn't have anybody. And I said this a couple years ago before I had a podcast, but I've said it. Pierre Garçon was at the time that the Redskins picked him up, he wasn't a proven number one receiver. He got hurt his first year with the Redskins. And he came back. He's just, I think he's a possession guy. He's a possession receiver. DeSean Jackson would open up the field. And you'd have Santana Moss, also a deep threat. You could probably move, you know, Jackson. Santana Moss is pretty old. I mean, granted, he's, you know, I don't know. But you have, he could still be a deep threat. DeSean Jackson is a deep threat. He can catch stuff over the middle. I mean, I wouldn't put him over the middle too much because he's a little guy, but he's a beast, man. And if the Redskins had somebody, exciting on offense that would be good for RG3. That would be good. I would like to see him flourish in that system. So what the Eagles are going to do, they got what, Riley Cooper, and we don't know how Jeremy Maclin. I hope Jeremy Maclin can play, because I like that kid, but he can't stay healthy. So they're gonna have that, and I just think they just didn't want to pay DeSean Jackson, and that's usually what happens. Am I getting out of my element with this football talk? I don't know, but I just know what I see as a dumb fan. I see the Redskins looking better on offense with, if you add DeSean Jackson to that team, and he probably wants to stay in the NFC East so he can play the Eagles twice and give them that work. I'm sure of it. And then what else? Julius Peppers got released by the Bears, and then got picked up by the Packers, but then the Bears turned around and paid Jared Allen, who I don't know. That's it. But Chicago never wants to pay anybody. I don't think they ever really paid anybody baseball wise, football wise, basketball. They really didn't pay Jordan what he was worth. So we'll see how this free agency goes, but one guy doesn't necessarily change the team. So we'll see. But I think if we get him to the Redskins, it'll be pretty interesting, and it'll be fun to watch. At least Madden would be dope. If you play with the Redskins, you throw a little cross patterns, little play action, get DeSean Jackson, open it up. Alfred Morris, you know, you got play action working. Can win you some games in Madden, at least. Because Lord knows, you never know what the Redskins are going to do. Somebody on Twitter said, if DeSean goes to, if he goes to the Redskins, he's going to forget how to play football as soon as he gets on the team. I don't know about that, but hey. So that was sports. Movies. I did see a movie. I went to the movies on Monday. Yeah, Monday I went to this movie theater in Port Chester, which is not far from my office job, and it's really nice. It's the AMC. It's one of the I guess relatively newer AMCs in that area, and it was nice. I went to go see Divergent. And I gotta say, folks, I enjoyed it. I was kind of looking forward to seeing this movie. This movie starred Shailene Woodley and Theo James. Shailene Woodley is one of these young. Who said this on Twitter? OMG. Oh man, hold on. Oh, I didn't even need to look it up. It was Emily Gordon tweeted something about, like she said, Emma Stone and Shailene Woodley are like, I should find this tweet. I got that she said it, but I'm going to find this tweet that she said, cause I thought it was really funny. And especially coming from a guy who you go to find stuff about young white starlet actresses. I'm going to find it for you. I'm looking through my favorites because I favorited the tweet. Looking for a favorite. Looking for a favorite on Twitter. I hope I find it sometime soon. I hope I find it for you. Because I'm running out of lyrics for this. I just scrolled up and I should have scrolled down. La da 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 do 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 do. Oh boy. Where the heck is it? I thought it would have happened before that. Well, I thought, oh my goodness. This is going off the rails here. I can't find it. But she basically said something about the turnover for these like relatable Hollywood starlets is just kind of getting out of hand with like Jennifer Lawrence, Emma Stone, and now Shailene Woodley. It's just sort of getting out of hand, and it's like you're the turnover is too fast. Like you got to let them cook a little bit, you know. Let them do that work. But I really like Shailene Woodley. I saw her, and she was in The Descendants. What else was she in? She was in The Secret Life of the American Teenager. Yeah, okay. She was in that. It was an ABC Family show. But she's, like, really cute. She's cute. She doesn't, in the movie, and I think most of the movie, she's legal. She's 22. So that's good. Where are her movies? She was in The Descendants was like her first big movie, the Alexander Payne, George Clooney movie. And then The Spectacular Now, which was last year's coming of age story with what's the dude, Miles Teller. And I like that one too. I think the indie movie nerds, I would consider myself an indie movie nerd, but some of the indie podcasters, critics were just like, oh my God, it was so, I saw it and I liked it. I liked it. And I do want to see this movie again, but I think the critics kind of sized this a little bit too much. It was just a solid movie. I liked it. Miles Teller was in it and she was in it. And apparently I heard that she was in the Amazing Spider-Man, but they cut her out. She's supposed to be Mary Jane and they cut her out, and the bloggers were trying to say she wasn't pretty enough. She's cute as shit, man. In this movie, like, she doesn't really have a lot of makeup, but I think she's cute. I think she's a cutie. Enough about her hotness. Let's talk about the movie. I really enjoyed it. Now, it's sort of like one of those. It's Hunger Games mixed with shit like a little bit of Gattaca, In Time. All these futuristic post-apocalyptic movies. This is supposed to take place in post-apocalyptic Chicago, and after some great war or some shit that happened, and you don't really know what happened, and the area is separated into factions, and I hope that there's got to be some. There's different types of factions called, okay, here we go. In a futuristic dystopian Chicago, people are divided into five factions. Abnegation, which is selfless people, amity, peaceful, candor, truthful, erudite, intelligent, and dauntless, brave, which is supposed to be brave, and is based on their personalities. And there's the young people of the town every year have a ceremony where they can choose which group that they want to belong to. And I don't want to give everything away, but just Shailene Woodley's character has to choose. And in the trailer, you find out that she's different from a lot of people, and we'll just leave it there. And then by the fact that she's different, some shit happens. And I don't want to put, I mean, I don't know that you could really, I don't know if you could really spoil this movie, but some shit happens and it's pretty interesting. Like, I want to just say, like, my expectations weren't, they weren't super high for this. So I was just like, oh, I like this actress. I'll go check it out. I got time to kill before a show. Right now, there's nothing really, like, I would recommend the Grand Budapest Hotel, but as far as just like a fun movie where you don't really have to be super engaged into it, I would say check it out, because there's not anything out right now. Now, Captain America Winter Soldier is coming out this Friday, so that's going to be something that everybody is going to get into, but as of now, Divergent is a solid movie. I think it was a better version of Ender's Game. I saw Ender's Game a couple weeks ago, and I really didn't care for it. It just seemed to be, there's a twist at the end, but it just seemed like it was too much training. This one was like Ender's Game plus like Hunger Games divided by Inception. So it had all these elements, but I think the actors make it work. Like the actors, like Shailene Woodley is a good actor. So you would be able to like just invest in her story, invest in her character. And then Theo James is the lead guy. Zoe Kravitz is in it. She's nice to look at. She's hot. How old is Zoe Kravitz? I hope she's legal. How old is she? Oh, she's 25. Okay. She's Lisa Bonet and Lenny Kravitz's daughter. She's gorgeous. So Theo James, what was he in? I would see people tweet about him saying that he's hot. He's a good looking guy, but I don't know what else has he been in. You Will Meet a Tall Dark Stranger, the Inbetweeners movie, Underworld. I have not seen Underworld Awakening. I have not seen any of the... What was he on that was pop? Oh, so he was on Downton Abbey. That's the big thing that he was on. Okay. Good for him. He's a good-looking guy. He was good. I would say check it out. Definitely check it out. If you could check it out at a matinee, even better. How about that? But yeah, Ender's Game, I really didn't like it because the movie just seemed to be all about this bullshit training. And there was a big training sequence in Divergent, but they said for the next 2 months you're going to be da 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 da. So it really felt like 2 months. There were parts that kind of dragged, but I get why they were doing it. Like if you compare it to the Hunger Games, just things seem to just like go a little quicker. Exposition seemed to come along a little quicker in that one. It moved really well, and I noticed how the Catching Fire, the second one had a lot more fluidity than this one did. There were scenes in this movie that were pretty violent, but I was almost thinking like, oh, this still isn't. There are too many cut sequences with the violent scenes that made you that they could have did more with it. I remember some of the most violent, I want to say one of the most violent scenes that I've seen in the past few years, I would say would be the Jaden Smith Karate Kid movie. Cause it was just, I don't know if the impact was felt more because there were kids fighting, but it was just the brutal nature of it was just like really intense, and I was like, ugh. And I felt I had some of those feelings with Divergent, some of those scenes, but for the most part, I felt like they could have did more with that, and to just show how rough it was. Also, if you saw The Spectacular now, and you see this movie, Miles Teller is in this, as in Divergent as well, and he's sort of playing Shailene Woodley's who plays Triss in Divergent, he's sort of her adversary, and it's pretty funny interesting, you know, if you've seen that movie and then you see Divergent. I would say definitely check it out. Mekhi Phifer was in it. Shout out to Mekhi Phifer. Black actors. Hashtag. You know, that was good. I would say fuck with it. You know what I'm saying? It was solid. And then I got one more, and then I reckon I'll let you go. I saw last week Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. And I don't know if you've seen my tweets about this, but it's just really bad casting. Idris Elba is such a brilliant and talented actor, but he looks like Jadavian Clowney and Javon Curse. He just looks like every muscular defensive end, and it just looks like my suspension of disbelief was just on overdrive, because I believe that he could have broke out of prison. Like, he could have just sacked apartheid and just ended it at any time that he wanted to. Really good acting. He looked more like Mandela as they aged him. It's just these trying to get Oscar movies is just kind of like I'm trying to get this. And it was just overall, the movie was, it was just okay, but it just took me out of it, man. Mandela was a slight man, but then they showed him as a woman. He has a pretty good, for a PG-13 movie, some pretty decent sex scenes. I didn't expect that. Basically Mandela had him some women while he was fighting for the struggle. It was just kind of like, all right, if you're an Idris Elba fan, you check it out. I think he's super talented, but just make sure your suspension of disbelief is just on like 100. You know, make sure it's as the young people say, turned up. All right. So that's it, guys. That's the end of the podcast. Check out my dates on my website, and maybe some new dates will come up. But it's been great. 60 episodes. Stay tuned for episode 61 next week. All right. Take it easy, everybody. Next week.